Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Working Out God. In today's episode, Beulah has been able to speak with Joanna Adeyinka Burford, a TV presenter, actress, and creative educator with an incredible career. Joanna trained at Italia Conti Academy, New York Film Academy, and Middlesex University, graduating with a first-class degree in professional practice, dance, and education. She began her career as an actress and dance teacher before moving into presenting, launching her career in 2011 after winning Channel 5's Home and Away Bay Reporter competition. She became a familiar face on CBeebies presenting the RTS award-winning Let's Go Club, guest presenting Stargazing, co-presenting Pablo Live Lessons, and regularly appearing on the CBeebies House. Joanna has hosted live BBC events and interviewed authors such as Christina Cowell. Alongside her television work, she is presented for faith-based projects including Living in Love and Faith and The Wellbeing Journey, worked with Rototo Children's Charity in Uganda, and supported creative learning in schools. A qualified ballet teacher and equity member, Joanna combines her love of performance with education. We're so excited to share this conversation with you, so let's jump right in.
Hi, Joanna. Good morning. Hello. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's been really exciting, actually, to pull this all together and to have you involved. And I'm going to throw myself straight into the deep end with questions with you. My first question that I wanted to ask is, could you share with us your earliest faith memory and why has that stayed with you?
My earliest faith memory is, it's probably from going back to probably about 5 or 6 years old. And my mum used to take us to church every week. And I remember sitting in my bed and writing songs to Jesus. And I don't know why that's stuck with me so much. And maybe it was a very early window into the creativity that was going to be later in my life. Not that I've ever written a song, not a serious one anyway. Okay. But, you know, I remember just wanting to worship Jesus and just having a heart so full of just love for, you know, for God. And also with that, I do also remember there were things that I thought, oh no, God, I hope you still, this area of my life isn't really great. I wish I could just have it all together. Almost that wanting to, you know, almost wanting to be perfect. And I guess at that really tender age, not knowing that your Heavenly Father loves you despite of all the stuff that you don't have together, and you don't need to be perfect. And he's got it all together so that we don't have to. But obviously, I didn't know that as a 5 year old, and I do remember thinking, I just want to have it all together so that, you know, I can be all that you want me to be, type of thing. But yeah, I remember sitting and writing songs in my head to God.
Wow, they're big questions and big thoughts to have as a 5 year old. I know you're a bit of a list writing person and very organised. Yeah. How does God then fit into your lists and structure of being organised?
That's a great question. I think for me, being organised and writing lists is a way of being able to function. And if I haven't done that, I'm not as productive. And so I feel like I have to do that in order to make space in my life to be able to have all the healthy God elements in my life as well, in terms of having space to just voice note somebody and pray for them or check in on them, or spend the first portion of my day just reading my verse of the day or watching my little YouVersion encouragement or story, and or just getting up and having a stretch and having a pray, means that if I've got a list in place and my head is clear, it gives me space to do those things, because otherwise I would just be in a like tiz the whole time going, I've got so much to do, not ever doing anything, probably spinning around, and then not leave myself the space to do the important things. So it's almost, I do the list and I do the organizing so that I can have the freedom and flexibility and time to do things that are important. Because ultimately, God has to come first. Yes. You know, yeah. God, it's God first. But and maybe this will shift as time goes on and not needing to write so many lists. But for me, it's the way I construct my life so that I can create space.
Oh God.
So get the things done.
Yeah.
Whenever they're allocated to be done, and know that I can spend this 20 minutes in the morning doing this because I've got the rest of the day taken care of, you know, in a list. I know what else I have to do. So I can, now I don't have to get up and start emailing at 6 a.m. I can spend my 6 a.m. with a little bit of quiet time before cracking on.
That makes actually complete sense.
It's a weird way.
No, it does actually. It does. I used to be a list maker and then found myself getting quite overwhelmed with feeling like I hadn't worked through the list quick enough or hadn't done what I did. And so almost I've parked the list, almost like burying my head in the sand, if that makes sense. But there is an element of control and structure and direction when I used to write lists. So I think I've been challenged listening to you to maybe go back and bring back the list and the pages into my life. And Jo, you've been quite involved in your life and in the past around the Wellbeing Project. Could you tell me, because especially in this day and age, you know, well-being, mental health, self-care are hugely important, especially with everything that's going on at the moment and coming out of the pandemic. What was the driver behind that project, and what have you done personally to change and improve your own well-being?
That's great. Yeah, I was so fortunate to be able to be involved in this Wellbeing Journey, which is actually based around a book that was written by Dave Smith, who runs a church up in Peterborough, and he'd written a book called God's Plan for Your Wellbeing.
Yeah.
And in the book, there are kind of seven areas of wellbeing that they look at, and looking at them as individual areas, but also how they impact each other. You know, your relational wellbeing can impact your physical well-being, you know, for some people your emotional well-being, and your financial well-being can impact your emotional well-being, or your, you know, they can all be connected. Interlinked.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the premise of the book. So the idea was, and it wasn't my idea, I was kind of brought into it, was that we would make this into an accessible journey for people to go on and explore each of these areas, and interviewing various people who are experts or people who have testimonies in those specific areas. So I was brought in primarily as a presenter to work on the project, myself and Simon Thomas.
Yes.
So we both kind of, but we both went on the journey, really, like physically. We drove around the country in these wellbeing journey minis, learning and interviewing and people and really kind of getting into it. And there were things that changed in my life. One of the big things that I shifted was my financial well-being. And being self-employed, I'd always been a little bit fly by the seat of your pants when it came to finances, because I never really knew what was coming in from month to month. So I got some really great advice from the founder of Christians Against Poverty, who just gave me some really solid advice on how to manage my finances, which also then in turn impacted my emotional well-being, because it gave me a sense of freedom and a sense of peace with it. Yeah. And I was actually able to sort of organize things in a way that could work for somebody who's self-employed and, you know, didn't really know what was coming in, but could kind of work with what I'd got and structure things a bit differently. And that was a massive shift for me. And that's been really helpful. And it's something that I probably might have heard me say before. I know that a lot of my friends will have kind of heard me say, right, like, let's get you organized. Let's get you download this app, organize your pots of savings and think ahead and transfer your bills out, you know. And I've really taken it on board in my own life, and it's something that I often share with other people to give them that same kind of security and freedom. So then when it comes to those things like Christmas is coming or it's a kid's birthday, okay, it's okay, because I've planned for that.
Yes.
And I've got that there. So that was a big thing that shifted for me during the wellbeing journey.
Amazing. As you just said, actually, because your career is being self-employed, you don't know when the next project is coming or the next job is coming. Mm. How have you navigated? How has, you know, your career been shaped by your faith in such an unknown industry, and in such an industry where, gosh, I think daily you've got to kind of surrender, yeah, and say, well, what's happening? What does the next quarter look like? What does the next year look like? So how yeah, has your faith played a part in that? Or has that been an area of questioning with God and wrestling with God over the years? Or have you arrived at a place that you can say, no, I'm good, I can trust you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I definitely think this is a journey that you, well, for me personally, obviously everyone's different, but I could not walk this career journey without faith, without my faith and without my trust in God, because
yeah,
like you said, there is so much unknown. And from the get-go, when I sort of transitioned into wanting to do more presenting, and anyone who's listened to me speak as well before has probably heard this, but I went after getting a presenting agent and couldn't for the life of me get a presenting agent. It's got to be hands down the hardest thing in the world to do. Nobody wants to take you on as a presenter unless you're already a presenter. And even now, after over 10 years of presenting, I still, if I tried, likelihood is I wouldn't be able to get a presenting agent. I have an acting agent. But I remember God saying all those years ago, you know what, don't worry, just let me be your agent, you know. And God can open doors that no man can shut, and he has. You know, I sort of was able to move out of having to do, you know, often as creatives you are doing your creative journey and then you're also doing your, okay, I'm doing this job to pay the bills, which for me was working in a primary school,
right?
And I was able to move out of having to have that second for various reasons, family circumstances and children and things as well. But actually, I'm so blessed to be only doing creative things now, which I love. And that is, I fully give all glory to God, because I know that this is not, it's not in my strength. Yes, I work hard, I'm diligent with my work, I try and do the work well,
yes,
and all of that. But I know that God has a massive hand on the kind of the doors that open for me. And I never want to be in a position where I kind of just go, I'm okay now. I'm okay. Like I'm not ever okay. I'm not ever okay. I always need God. I always need direction. I always need to keep trusting in him. I always need to keep checking in and going, is this the right move? I'm not really sure. Or if I just do this, then just give me a nudge if it's wrong. You know, yeah. Or just close the door, or just really convict me if this is not the next step that I should take. And I do that even, you know, after so many years of being in the industry and 20 years of from when I started acting, really 20 plus years, I still will do that now. If I want to make a significant shift about something, then I have to, you know, it's a check-in, and it's a, right, God, what are we doing here? And is this right? Is it not right? Yeah. Open the doors. And you pray, and sometimes it's not just about, I think in my very early years, the prayers were very different. Of, you know, oh, please open this door, or oh, please, I'd love to get this audition. And now it's not that. It's not. It's, I just want to walk with you and I'll go for this. If it's good, cool. If it's not, all right, cool. Like, it's, you know, you change your, you change the way you pray, because actually the most important thing is that I'm seeking God and I'm walking with God. The most important thing is not that I get the job. That, and that has been a massive shift over the years, a slow shift. But I listen to a lot of, you know, younger people coming up on the journey, and it is, you know, it's very much, I'm just praying that I get this. And sometimes it's not, I'm not saying there's anything wrong to do that, but I think for me, I've shifted from praying to get the job to just needing to know that I'm walking side by side with God. All the other stuff will come. If it's meant to be, it will come.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's strength, right? That strength, like spiritual strength, to have made that transition over the years in your career.
Yeah. 100%. I think it takes a lot of takes a lot of no's with that as well. It's not that you just, because I think sometimes if you were just to get everything, you wouldn't really understand the journey of when things aren't right. You have to go through that. It can't just be that you sail through life. My life would be very different, and my faith walk would be really different if I just got every job that I went for. I wouldn't be the person who I am.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, sure. You have to walk through the hard times as well. Like,
that's where we grow. That's where we grow, I think, for me.
I mean, it's great that you've got a smile as you even say that, because sometimes we would just like, God, just answer all our prayers, please. Just let it always be yes. And sometimes as you get older, you increasingly are thankful for the prayers he didn't answer over the prayers that he did answer. So I can completely relate to that. And Jo, as you said at the start of the podcast, you know, as a five-year-old, you were writing songs for God in your head, and you've been a teacher and you've been a dancer and a presenter now. You've got quite an exciting project that you're working on, and are you now moving into the world of being an author as well? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, it's almost not accidentally, but kind of, because I had the during the pandemic, I received an email saying, would you like to write a book? And this was actually, the initial question was about writing a book about mental health for adults, for Christians. Now, I did the wellbeing journey, but I have no experience, no training, no qualification in wellbeing or mental health. And so that was not something I was going to do because I didn't feel that... I would be of I would not be of value to the world doing that when I know absolutely nothing about it. But I also then got another email at a similar time from a publisher who was merging with that same publisher, asking, would I like to write something for children? And again, this was one of those moments where I had to go away and check in with God and go, do I want to do this? And if I do, what am I doing? And after, you know, sitting on it for a little bit, came up with a concept of writing essentially it's a devotional. I've called it a book of encouragement, and it's for children, for kids aged kind of 7 to 11. And it's all based on stories from my life. What I've experienced, you know, the ups and the downs, the highs and the lows of walking through faith when things haven't been great and sometimes when things have been great. And I pitched that concept to them, and yeah, they decided to go with it. So that was a project that's been ongoing for a couple of years, and it was a labor of love, a passion project, you know, we've also done an audiobook that goes with it. And I think for me, the audiobook is almost going to be more impactful than the physical book, because it's going to allow space for the kids
to really connect with God for themselves, to sit in his presence, hopefully, and be asked a couple of simple questions, but just be able to pray and connect with God and their journey, as I did as a kid and do now, even now, you know, and as we all do, sit in the presence of God. But hopefully that's going to facilitate that for young people as well, which I'm really excited about.
It sounds absolutely amazing. But was that difficult for you to have to go back over those low points in your life? I know that one of those low points that you've spoken about before, and you know, Simon Thomas that you paired up with on the Wellbeing Project, he'd obviously spoken quite openly about the grief and the loss that he'd had with losing his first wife, and I know that you had lost your best friend back in 2020. So as you were going back over, you know, your life, reflecting on your life, were there quite challenging points, like wounds and raw moments that you had to, oh gosh, haven't dealt with that. That still hurts. Still,
yeah, I think
from my eyes.
Yeah, there was so much that I wrote about. Some stuff that, you know, obviously more difficult stuff like grief, which I'll touch on in a minute. But everything I wrote about, I've got the benefit of writing about it in hindsight. So I'm not walking, you know, I'm not right in the thick of it. And it's all, everything is from a perspective of where was God in this? How did I find God in this? How did I walk with God in this? And I think having sort of been through it, it wasn't stuff that was painful anymore, because it's really myself kind of going on the other side of it. This is where God was in this. You know, at the time, a lot of these stories, and even the encouraging ones, that even reading them back when I was recording the audiobook, I was going, I love this story. To the producer, I'm going, I love this story. I share it so much to people. It's so encouraging, because every time I remember it, I think, yes, of course, this is sometimes how God speaks to us. And, you know, so there's moments where I was being encouraged from reading my stories. But with the grief was one of the ones I wanted to touch on, because I kind of almost touched on it twice in the book, really. Once with a chapter called Good Grief, because I think that kids can grieve lots of different things. You can be grieving the relationships of your parents if they've separated. You could be grieving the loss of somebody, a sibling, a parent. You know, there's lots of different levels we can experience that on. And I touch on it again in another chapter entitled P-R-A-Y, why? As in like, why? Why do we pray? Because when I, and that's when I mentioned my friend who I lost, because we prayed and we prayed and we prayed and we prayed a lot. And obviously she went to be with Jesus in the end. And, you know, it's exploring that really tough question of sometimes we pray, and sometimes we don't get the outcome that we really want. But actually, what I had to reconcile with was that God's promise is that we will be healed and whole.
Yeah.
And there is no more pain and no more tears and no more suffering in heaven. So she is healed and whole in heaven, even though she's not healed and whole here with us, which is obviously would have been the ideal and what we would have wanted. But actually, God's still faithful, and God's still good, and she still received that fullness of eternal life with our Heavenly Father. But they were really hard questions, really hard kind of things to. And I think I start that chapter by saying, "Okay, I don't even have the answer to this, but I'm going to throw this question out anyway." You know, what happens when we pray and the prayers aren't answered? So really kind of really, I don't know, things that I think we all walk through, even as adults. And any sort of friends or parents who have kind of read this book on the journey as I've been writing it have sort of said, I mean, this is good for kids, but it's also good for me, you know, because, you know, we're all on the journey. We're all walking through difficult things. And it's so amazing to be able to encourage one another through
our stories and what we've experienced, but then allow space for the Holy Spirit to speak to you personally about whatever's going on.
100%. I think truth is truth, right? It's universal. Mm. So it will always transcend generations. And it was interesting that when you were talking about, you know, that regardless of whether our prayers are answered or not, they are answered at one point, whether that be in the lifetime that we're in or the life that we look forward to as Christians in eternity with God. And that I remember listening to when Tony Evans lost his wife a few years back, and during the funeral, her son, their son got up and he said exactly the same, Jonathan Evans. He'd said, you know, our prayers were answered because although she's not healed in the natural, she is healed in heaven. And that's ultimately the end goal for us as Christians, is there is another life after this. And that's the hope that we look forward to, and not in our own circumstances. But Joanna, as you said, one of the chapters in the book is about good grief, and you touch on the incredibly difficult experience that you had of losing your best friend. And I know that in the past, I've heard along the way in my own Christian journey, people have said that, you know, when you go through a particular season, you get to see and experience God in a different way. So if you've had a season of, say, financial challenges, that's when you'll see, you know, Jesus as, or God as your Jehovah Jireh, your provider. So during that season of grief and praying and believing and not quite seeing that particular prayer come into fruition in the natural realm, how did you press into God more, or was that the moment that you had a Job moment and loads of whys, or what was your kind of mindset and attitude, and how were you feeling at the time, and how have you navigated that particular season?
I think definitely there were definitely loads of whys.
I think, you know, that is just a part of the grief journey, isn't it? That we, you know, we're sad, and we're also, you know, there's confusion because you think, oh, but, you know, you're a God of, you know, you can do anything. Why didn't you do this? And it doesn't seem fair, and all of those kind of things, and definitely did all of that. Lots of wrestling with God in it. But I think there's something that I'd done, and not really intentionally, I don't think, but about 2 weeks before she died, was I'd actually very spontaneously written a poem. And it was very much about, you know, the journey of prayer and also the amazing things that God had done. So she probably had 3 more years than she maybe could have, you know, and that was 3 extra years with her boys. That was 3 extra years with her husband. That was 3 extra years of her journey, her faith journey with God growing closer. And it was this poem that I'd written really was about the journey that we'd been on, and how God had been so faithful and answered so many prayers in that time. And for me, you know, when she passed away and being able to look back on that and what I believed, because sometimes, you know, it's such a confusing time for you, and you're like, what, you know, you're wrestling and you're questioning and you're almost thinking, what, you know, what do I believe? This has shaken my whole, you know, belief system, whatever. You're actually being able to kind of go, well, that is what I believe. And that all was true. And he did answer prayers, and he is still a faithful God. And she did have all this, and she did have this, and you know what I mean? And being able to look back at that was something that really, really encouraged me. I was able to, it was a bizarre thing, really, to be able to kind of look back at something you've written before the grief,
And so, yeah, there was that. And then just holding on to verses like Isaiah 55, for your thoughts are not my, for my thoughts, sorry, are not your thoughts, neither are your ways mine. You know, declares the Lord, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. And I think any time that I've had rocky, tough seasons in my life, that is a verse that I've always clung on to. God, well, you know what? My ways aren't God's ways. His ways are higher than my ways. He does know, you know, way beyond what we can comprehend. And
right.
Trying to hold fast to things that were stable and the word of God. Do you know what I mean? That is, it's yeah. got to be the most stable thing in my life. It doesn't, you know, it's powerful and it doesn't move, it doesn't shake, it doesn't change. God doesn't change. And so in the time where I was sort of maybe feeling a bit all over the place or blown left and right and, you know, questioning and grieving, things like that to be able to hold on to were really amazing. Not that it makes the journey any easier, but I also think we have to allow ourselves to walk the grief journey, and it's okay. And it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry, and it's okay to try and bargain, and it's okay to do all the normal things in a grief process. Because it's a part of life. And I think allowing yourself to feel everything is really important, not kind of hiding from your own feelings. But I think, you know, so for some people as well, just being able to talk to somebody, whether that is close friends, but like you said, it's interesting. Until you've walked through it, you don't really understand it. And I think that sometimes we can be a blessing. I know that now somebody else, I had another friend who lost a friend about a year ago, and I was able to walk with her through that journey in a way that I wouldn't have been able to before. And so that is a real blessing, but also I'm mindful of the fact that you might have a friend or a partner who hasn't experienced it and isn't really able to understand what you're going through. So in those cases, you may want to go and seek speaking to somebody, whether it be a professional or somebody else who has walked through it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so much, and it's so layered, that journey, so layered. But I think I'm sort of fortunate as well that I've walked with God for so many years. I think that you know, had this have happened to me in my 20s or something, maybe my response would have been completely different. Maybe it would have really knocked me off course. Who knows? I don't know. But I think I've got so much, there's so much foundation, and I can never imagine my life any other way than walking with Jesus. That even in the toughest time, that was what it was going to be. And I think I had to, and I've asked myself this various times in my life through different situations, is do you trust God or not? Do you or not? Because there's not really any in between for me.
Sure, sure.
I either trust you, like with my career, whether I'm going to live, whatever the situation will be with this journey of this has happened. Do I trust God? Or don't I? Because, and if I'm saying that I do, then I need to have 2 feet in, and I fully do. And it kind of got to that point as well where I had to ask myself that question again. Do I trust you or not? I do trust you. Okay. Well, then let's walk that out together. Let's figure out
how
to get through this.
Wow. I think for me, I've realised I spent so much of my life almost like hiding my feelings from God. And it was ridiculous because a bit like what David says, which is, you know, where can I go and you not find me or you not be with me? And actually I've embraced, you know, Drake's saying of, I'm going to be in my feelings, God, and these are my feelings. They are as raw as they get. And, you know, the Psalms are full of, you know, David and other individuals crying out to God and being completely vulnerable and open with him, you know, telling them exactly the fears and the disappointments and the frustrations and the sadness that they have felt. But yet God's faithfulness just shines ever more bright in those moments. And I've just realized as I've got older that actually God said, come to me, you know, come to me if you're grieving, come to me if you're sad, come to me if you're overwhelmed, come to me. And that's all he wants is of us. He doesn't want us to have figured it all out and to be healed and to have done our seven steps of getting through this or that. He's just saying, come to me just exactly as you are. And that's offered me great comfort, you know, daily when I wake up that week and think, gosh, what are we going to do? How's this week going to look? How are we going to get through this? I've just intentionally said, you know what? I'm just going to come to him and let him figure this out because he's God and I'm not.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And we do sometimes have to, we have to get there, don't we?
Absolutely.
There's a reason why I'm not God as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. But Jo, who in your life has been like your faith warrior or your faith hero that's inspired you, has helped you stay this course, or, you know, who's that person for you?
It's probably my mum, really. You know, my mum is always, she would always bring it back to the truth, you know, like you said, and truth doesn't, it can't lie, it transcends time and distance and ages, you know, she'll always bring it back to the truth. She's always championed me as both my parents and my sister, incredible champions of me as a person, which I think is really important when it comes to your faith journey, because you're walking your faith journey. I can only walk my faith journey. You know, they're not walking my faith journey, but they can champion me and support me and encourage me in who I am, not trying to make me into someone else or trying to steer me in a particular direction. Just allow me the space to learn some things for myself, maybe learn some things the harder way, perhaps, as I might have done. But they've always given me, my family have always given me the encouragement in just who I am first and foremost, which I think has been just a real blessing in being able to find it for myself. There's no, you know, somebody can, I always think if someone can talk you into something, someone else can talk you out of it.
Sure.
That's no good. You know, that's not what we need. We need to be able to have the space and have the freedom to work it out for ourselves. Work out your faith with fear and trembling. You work it out. I'm not going to work it out for you. You know, it's like, you work it out. But if you don't give someone, allow someone the space to do that, how can they do that? So they've always been amazing pillars of strength, consistency, and just freedom for me.
Wow. And you've mentioned, as we, in the introduction, we were talking about your upbringing, and you grew up not in London. So in Hampshire, was that was your home, that was your upbringing. How was that for you? You know, not necessarily a very multicultural county or place. How did you feel or get your sense of belonging? Did that come from the church, from your family, or something bigger than all of that?
Yeah, I think definitely family. Definitely would have come from family. But I think it was a whole journey that's kind of gone beyond living there and beyond that time, because obviously I grew up in a predominantly white environment, and that's all that I knew. And actually it's definitely influenced a lot of the way that I am. The funniest, probably not the funniest thing, but one of the funny thing that happened to me many years ago was I had a phone conversation with somebody, a phone interview. And when they met me, they said, "Oh my goodness, I thought you were white." I thought you were white. Because it's all I've, you know, that is, it's, it was a huge part of my upbringing, just being around and having to, even though I would probably think differently, but obviously as a child, you just want to fit in. You want to fit in with people around you. So you mold to the people around you. And now life's very different. Life is, I live in London. Life is a lot more diverse. And I've had to, you know, and it's, again, it's something that I touch on in the book. It's, I've spent a lot of time as a kid trying to fit in with various different groups of people and didn't really fit anywhere, not because of race necessarily, just because of, you know, could be, you know, just different, I don't know, just different, random different things, trying to fit in, didn't really fit, but also just acknowledging the fact that God made me uniquely. Yes. And that's okay. I don't need to fit in anywhere. I don't need to feel like I fit a group. But when you find people that then just accept you for who you are, that's a beautiful thing. But it did. It shaped a lot of my journey, and a lot of my thinking now even has been shaped. And there's obviously been lots of challenges that have gone along with being a person of colour generally in the world. I think there's a lot of challenges that go along with life.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Amazing. And your audience, if we kind of look at your career with CBBS and the pantomimes and then the book that you're writing, it's a heart for young people, and you were a teacher as well. What would you say to your younger self now, Joanna, if you had to go back to that girl at 5 or that girl at 16? What would you say to yourself about life, faith, God, or anything, actually? What would you say?
Yeah, I think if I had a chance, I would just go back and I'd sit with her. You know, I would sit with my younger self and just be with her and encourage her that, you know, she's more than enough. You don't need to try and be anyone else. Who you are is more than enough. And just encourage her just to keep, like, dream bigger than you think you need to. Like, wow. don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to think on a bigger scale. Don't play small. Just, you know, there's so much in you. You've got a box full of treasures in you. You can choose anyone. Mm-hmm. Choose anyone and then go for it. Go with it and keep dreaming. Be wise about the people you put in your life. And just, yeah, offer her the encouragement that I would offer any young person now, that I could sit and have a chat with and spend time with. I'd go and do that for myself. And it's not because I didn't have it, but I would love to be able to just kind of look at that younger self and be able to say, you know, you're enough. You're enough.
And do you think the messaging that's coming out at this moment, especially in this culture, I mean, you have children and I've got children as well. And sometimes I look around at what is being drummed at them or being directed at them. And I keep thinking, oh gosh, I mean, yes, maybe when I was growing up, there was similar messages, but now it just feels like there's so much more. And do you think that it's ever more important now to tell our young people that actually you don't need to look like that, you don't need to have a side hustle and a job, and you don't need to, do you know what I mean? Like, it just feels like there's this constant, there should be more, your life should be more. And, or do you think our generation, maybe we played it too safe, and actually this is the generation of anything is possible?
I don't know. It's probably a bit of both. I think that definitely, I know that in my life, I even though I'm so thankful of all the opportunities that I've had,
yeah,
but I definitely think on some levels with some things I've played it safe, and I probably could have pushed boundaries and, you know, studied other things or whatever it might be. And I think now young people have such opportunity, and they will, this next generation will do things that we have never seen before. They will have trouble, some of them, being able to articulate what they want their career path will be, because that career path doesn't even exist yet.
So true, yeah.
And I just think, what an incredible time to be living in for them, in terms of how they can connect around the world, what they can do. Like, it's exciting. But obviously there's a dose of wisdom and health that should be applied, because,
yeah,
you know, it would be very easy. The boundaries with work life are so blurred for sort of the younger generations now. You know, people are just, and even I guess for myself as a self-employed person, it's easy for people to be emailing you late at night or at the weekend and expecting, and I know I see that from a lot of people in their kind of 20s. There's no boundaries. There's no 9 to 5 anymore. That's not the way that work life is. So I think it's really exciting. I think that, you know, I would encourage, especially for my own children, I'm like, yeah, you don't need to just fit into like a box and, you know, let's like open our minds. Or what could you do? What, you know, there's so much possibility, but also being able to hold on to the other things that are important in life, the rest element of life, which a lot of people just seem to ignore sometimes, particularly people who are in church and find themselves working a job and then, you know, serving at church at the weekend and doing, you know, never stopping. I think those fundamental things we need to hold on to. We need to like actually still make sure you take a day off, you take time off, you look after yourself. So I think there's definitely, there's a shift in what's possible for people, but I mean, some things just shouldn't ever get left behind. I think everyone should be able to look after themselves and rest and have fun with their family and friends and not be completely swamped by work all the time.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's balance. So what do you do for rest? What does rest look like for you? And what does fun look like for you?
Well, rest for me, again, this comes back sort of back around to those lists, really. Because I almost, in what I exactly,
I love
what
these,
I said,
lists. I love
lists of my life. Because if I make a list of things that need to be done, if I'm at home for the day, this won't necessarily apply if I'm in the studio or if I'm traveling. But if I do have a day at home or I'm working from home, and then I'm also juggling sort of housework, then I'll structure my list of things to be done between 9 and 1 or whenever. And then I'm scheduling in time to just chill and rest between 1 and 3 when I pick up the kids. Yeah. So again, that kind of structure allowing me to have space. Yeah. And obviously I love being able to carve out time at the weekends to take the kids out and do fun things with them. I'm forever kind of planning ahead to what's happening and, you know, what's happening in the next couple of months, and let's book something to do. I think for me, it's really important because life is so varied that I actually book things in.
Yeah.
If I don't, they'll never happen. So I remember last year, just before the Christmas season, it's kind of September time, and I was like, right, let's book some fun things in for the Christmas holidays. And my husband sort of, you know, looks at me sort of thinking,
that's September.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But you know, I always thank my earlier self when I do it, because I think, A, then it's done and it's paid for, and I don't have to, you know, we don't get to Christmas and go, oh, I can't really, don't want to spend any more money. But actually, But we've got a lovely experience. So I think we went and did some, you know, we went to see the Magic Circle Christmas show and all these kind of things last year. And I think unless I book them in, or we'll book ahead to go and visit some friends in, you know, we went to see some friends in Ireland last year as well. And I booked that in January. So I had the time carved out, because otherwise a job will come up. But if I if it's ring fence, so that time is sacred for going on holiday or for going out, booking a night out, booking a comedy night, booking a live music night. You know, I'll try and always, I do love to be spontaneous as well, but often it's more likely to happen if I've just kind of booked it in ahead.
Yeah.
So I've got, and also it's nice to have things to look forward to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And plus things I didn't realise, one of my, every year I set myself a challenge, which is try and get the QE trail, the Christmas trail. And it's like sold out. Like I've tried in November and it's sold out. You try in October and it's pretty much sold out. So I completely understand and see the value of booking ahead because other people are doing it. And then you
everyone else on it. And you do, and you don't want to miss out. You don't want to think, oh, I wish I'd have done this. So yeah, I plan a lot ahead for the big fun things.
Yeah, okay. And then,
but rest needs to be a regular, you know, it needs to be built in as much as possible. And if that means sometimes having to be a bit disciplined and saying, well, I'm actually just going to have to go to bed a bit earlier tonight, then I do it, you know, because I need to be on form for my family or for work. You know, you can't, I can't be, I don't have it in me anymore to stay up really late.
Yeah, 8 o'clock, 8:30, a cup of tea and nothing better than a book and your bed and a bit of peace and quiet. Oh, yeah.
Get into my pyjamas.
Absolutely, absolutely. I get this image of you being someone that's like, okay, let's roll up our sleeves and let's go do this. Like, let's go do this life that we've got. Let's put in everything that we've got into this and see what he does with that. And I think that's a great attitude or kind of mindset to have, which is I'm not here just to kind of lay back and, as you said, you know, rub this genie in a lamp and say, can I have this, but actually you're very practical and realistic about this walk that we've got, which is actually this involves us not thinking that this is some kind of, you know, Hollywood dream that God has just got to fulfill for us, but actually this is a partnership, and my place in this isn't to say, what have you got for me, but it's almost like, okay God, what are we going to do together? Where are you taking me next, and what do you need from me from this season, and what does the next season look like? So actually I think I probably need to go back into my prayer cupboard and say, God, less of me and more of you after listening to you.
Yeah, and it's a journey though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's a journey of, and we don't, there's definitely things I sort of look back and go, why did you do that? That's really silly. You know what I mean? That's really silly. And even in the, you know, sometimes in the bigger things, but sometimes in the everyday things, and you go, oh, that wasn't a very good idea. But we learn as we go, right? We learn.
Absolutely.
And we don't need to beat ourselves up. We don't need to be perfect. We just need to have a willing heart to learn, I guess.
Amazing. I'm really excited to see how far and wide this book is going to go, and the audio book. I'm definitely going to tap into it, get a copy for my kids as well. Because especially I found, I don't know, my eldest, as he's getting older, you know, he's going into himself a little bit. You know, you ask him like how his day is, and it's fine, mummy, how are things at school? It's fine. And you think actually that there are so many tools, and this is going to be a great tool to actually be able to give to him that actually, yes, I'm here if you need me, but actually here you go. Here's other tools that you can read about and learn about. And it's exciting to then equip your own children, the next generation, so that they can go even further and know God even in a deeper and more personal way than maybe I've taken a lot longer, if you know what I mean. So if I can equip him right from the beginning in his early days, then it's exciting to see what God will do with this with this gift that you have been obedient to. So we're really excited for you. And we'll put the details out when it's all released and ready to go.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited too.
Amazing. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for coming to speak to us and be so open and transparent about your faith journey. And we're here as, you know, championing you, and we're super grateful. Thank you for your time.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.